What's up, family? You are tuned into Law and Disorder, a podcast where we expose the cracks in our system, agitate for resistance, and collectively build a new world in which all of us can thrive. This is Resistance in Residence, where we profile artists using their gifts to change the world. This week's feature artist is the one, the only, y'all, DJ Lady Ryan. What's up? Lady Ryan, how are you?
Hello, hello. It's an honor and a pleasure to be here. I'm doing great.
I'm just realizing this is the first time we've had you on the show, which is sort of wild, actually.
I'm excited.
So, this will have to be the first of many.
Thank you.
But Lady Ryan, I want to start with a bit about you and specifically where and how you grew up. What was your family like? Yada, yada.
Cool. So I was born in Washington, D.C., and I was raised in Hampton, Virginia, which is home to a historical Black college, Hampton University, where the Emancipation Oak is, where enslaved folks first learned how to read. I went to Hampton University for elementary school. We sang the National Black Anthem every day. I was raised in a Black household. I am Black. And I had a good upbringing. My mom never made me go to church, but I wanted to go every Sunday so I could sing in the choir right down the street from my house. It was a beautiful time. I think about how where I grew up was a bit segregated because we were close to the ocean, and you can kind of see that in the landscape of, like, you know, all the well-to-do folks, as they would say, you know, are on the ocean. And then there's like a certain street, Mallory Street, where that kind of separates. And then the Black folks are like on the other side. Not to say that Black folks aren't well-to-do, but that it was just very segregated there. But I had a beautiful upbringing. I moved to the Bay Area in 98, and not realizing it at the time, the kind of parallel that I was kind of going into with the history of Oakland, Berkeley, San Francisco. There's just a lot of parallel there between resistance, you know, and community and folks fighting for freedom. It was really dope because I didn't realize that at the time until I got here and kind of, like, you know, soaked in and got more involved in the community and was like, wow, this makes, you know, total sense for me as a young person to be here from where I came from.
Yeah. And I mean, in two Black cities, right? Like Black cities with Black politics and Black organizing. I want to go back to you talking about you wanted to go to church so that you could sing in the choir. Is the church where you discovered the power of music?
That's a good question. I think it started, yeah, I guess so. You're right. It's the unison of voices, those harmonies. I guess I never really thought about it like that, but my parents would always play music in the house, especially, you know, when it's time to clean on Saturdays or Sundays. So there was that, but I think witnessing the unison of voices in a choir is so moving. That is definitely something that I wanted to be a part of. And I think, yeah, I think you're right. That is where I witnessed the true power.
So did your journey with music start as a singer? Are you still a singer? Do you sing?
So I don't sing as much as I used to. I did start as a singer in the church. And then I continued to be in the choir in school. And then when I moved here, I started dabbling around and I was in a band for a little bit. I love the Bay because there's just like, there would be jam sessions all the time, you know, and it's so multicultural here. So I would just be, you know, immersed in learning a lot just from folks, just regular folks, you know. And singing is, for me, vulnerable. And I've been DJing now for 18 years full time. And I really do think that it was kind of a decision of mine to take that route, take the route of DJing instead of singing, because it is so vulnerable to get up in front of folks. I am recently considering going back to that. I think that it's vulnerability is beautiful. It makes you strong. People can relate to you. It's powerful. So I don't want to, you know, I don't want to shy away from it in the same way that I have in my past. So I'm gathering up some motivation to move back towards singing.
DJing full time for 18 years. Let's just sit with that for a second.
Sure.
But start with, like, what was your pathway to becoming a DJ?
Thank you. So it began because I was around someone that was making beats. And back then, in order to make beats, you know, we're sampling from records. I wanted to make beats too. I was like, okay, this is dope. You know, just learning about sampling in music and, you know, hip hop, its origins, you know, delving into my parents' records. I learned a lot about music through hip hop, music that I may not have been exposed to. So that's where it started. I started collecting records. And then this was not by any means on purpose, but I was working this job and I was working at the front desk, and this guy comes up and he's like, I'm going to be selling all my DJ equipment. I don't even know him. I don't even know he was a DJ. It's like divine intervention or something, child, because it was not, I don't know why he came up to me to tell me this. And I wanted to do it so bad. And I was like 22 maybe. And, I didn't do it. I didn't buy anything. And he came to me one more time. He was like, this is, you know, I have two pair of turntables, a mixer, an amp, and a couple of needles. It was like a whole little package or whatever. He was like, this is the last of it though. And it was like $1,200. And I was like, so I had just exactly, you know, that much money saved up. And I talked to my parents about it and they were like, don't do it. You're, you know, totally discouraging. Okay. Like, no, do not go spend all your money on some record players. I did it anyway. Right. And I cried about it too. It was such a big decision. It's so funny and cute, but I got those record players, and I had an apartment in Oakland at the time. And I remember there was this DJ that lived upstairs from me, and I would look out on my patio doors and I could see him through kind of like the way the light shines at night. I don't know how to describe it, but I could see him up there practicing. I could hear him practicing, and he was playing Madlib and like all these cool artists that I love, like, you know, underground hip hop. I was very much into underground conscious stuff back then. And that was just super inspiring to me. Like, I was just amazed by it. I wonder to this day, who was that person? I wonder, I might even know him now. You know, you never know, but... But yeah, so I ended up quitting my job to learn how to, I went to Expressions College so I could do sound engineering.
Okay.
And from there, I met all the people, all the music, all the folks in the Bay that I've met ever since then. It's just been kind of like ongoing from that. But I met DJ Black there, not exactly there, but through people there. And she saw my record collection and was like, I'm going to teach you. And that was that. Like, I was hungry for it, and I just stood there for hours and hours.
For my listeners who don't know, because I didn't really know. Like, I've, you know, I've had friends that have been DJs. I was with this person for a while who threw these massive parties and, like, the big DJ and saw, like, this whole culture. When you say you are a full-time DJ, what does that actually mean? What is that life? What does that mean you do?
Right. What do you do,
Lady Ryan? Besides make us shake our booties.
Okay. So yeah, DJing has been my only source of income since 2005 or 2006, one of the two. And I'm constantly digging for music. I mean, the first 5 years I was constantly practicing. I don't practice as much as I want to now, but you know, constantly digging for music. And now it's become, I mean, back in the day it was, you know, doing some graphic work, printing flyers at the copy at the copy place, you know, going outside and talking to people and passing your flyers out to folks. You know, those days are gone now, but you know, as a business, you really have a lot of things that is incorporated into this. You know, you are buying equipment, you are researching, you are listening, you are, you know, there's, especially as for myself, I'm an open format DJ. So I play a lot of different genres. So I'm kind of always keeping my ear open. You know, I'm outside networking, I'm curating events, which, you know, includes, you know, scouting for talent and, you know, putting up my own money to make an event happen. Creating spaces for folks to get free, staying up late at night. I'm trying to change that now. I'm getting older. I'm getting wiser. So, you know, 2 o'clock in the morning is a little later than I want to be out these days, but, you know, it's not the healthiest of, professions if you're not careful. Mm-hmm. So I have definitely learned from that and am making my shifts, but it's been a beautiful journey for sure. And I just take it very seriously, and I'm very grateful that I'm capable to facilitate folks' joy and freedom on the dance floor. Mm. It's very psychological.
Your bio on your website, which is very well maintained, kudos to you, because I can't keep up with my website to save my life. I was like, oh, look at this. It's like updated and stuff. Wow, that's what it's supposed to look like, Kat. And for those of you who want to know, the website is ladyryan.com. You, in your bio, referred to as a spiritual conductor. What that mm-hmm. mean?
Thank you. So music is... I mean, you know, folks have different, you know, terms they want to use, but it is transcending. It's powerful. It's moving. It's unifying. And to me, music is spiritual, and it doesn't have to be about the Lord or any type of religion at all. But, you know, folks get on the dance floor, folks hear music, and they are. Or can be transformed. You know, their mood can shift. You can, you know, be brought to tears. You can have certain memories come up that are happy or joyous, or, you know, you want to move your body. And all of these things are important to me as a facilitator. So I'm kind of always opening my energy channels to who's in the room, you know, opening up my heart space to who's in the room to kind of tap in to feel what's needed. It's not a very selfish act on my own. It's like I'm wanting folks to get free. So I got to tap into where they're at, and it's a frequency, and I'm looking at body language, and I'm, you know, seeing if your toe is tapping or if your nostrils flare. Like, I'm like really paying attention. And if I can get you, that's like my greatest joy, is if I can just get you off the wall and, you know, you forget about your problems for a little bit. I love it.
So we know gender and race and heteronormative stuff pops up everywhere.
Oh, yeah.
You know, there's not a field, there's not a craft, there's not a space or place where there aren't conversations, where there aren't harmful norms rooted in patriarchy and white supremacy. Talk about how that plays out in the DJ world and how you've navigated it.
Well, that's a good question. I've navigated those things, racism, patriarchy, gender norms, by standing up for myself, by... You know, it's funny, like even just showing up on time and having a good attitude is half the battle of things. And, you know, always wanting to be considered for positions. And, you know, that in this craft, in this DJ world, you know, it's very male dominated. It has been historically. And I think folks are getting more aware about it, and I definitely see folks making changes, and that's really exciting to see. And it's this weird double-edged sword, because you want to be chosen because you're dope and you're good at your craft and you know what you're doing, not because you are Black, because you are gay, because you are a woman. But at the same time, we want folks to make sure that they are making spaces for the for us. So it's kind of a nuanced thing where you know you want both, you want talent, and you want for space to be made. But for myself, I make connections where I can, speak up, you know, put myself out there, show up on time, have a good attitude. When I get called upon, I just make sure that I show up at the best that I can. And I, you know, when I say stand up for myself, I mean, not back down. You know, I've had folks tell me like, oh, you just got this gig because you're a woman, or I come in and they don't think I know how to use the equipment or hook up the equipment or any of those things. And I'm like, you know, I have a very short patience for that type of stuff. And I am no punk. So I'm definitely just, you know, gonna bring that to light, you know, question someone, like, you know, question them as to what makes that go through your head that I wouldn't know what I'm doing. Like, really, you know, be self-aware, because, you know, if you think you're being helpful, you're not.
Lady Ryan, we have just seen a conservative backlash, not just in the country, but here in the Bay and Oakland specifically. Mm-hmm. How is all that sitting with you right now?
It's sitting sadly. It's like half of me is not even surprised because I know where we live. It's weird. It's like the same old in a way, but it's infiltrated in a way that I wasn't exactly expecting. And I think, you know, this capitalism and this money, you know, who has money? It's the undertone of all of it, whether it's Oakland or, you know, our entire country. It's in the micro and the macrocosm of it. And I feel sad about it. I feel concerned, you know, and I'm glad that, you know, folks are, we're reminding each other of, you know, what we got to do, you know, which is to get in community with each other, organize, you know, like not just talk about it, but get on, you know, the email list we need to be on, show up at the meetings we need to show up at. You know, I mean, it always creates a motivation. You know, it's like, okay, we got to see what is it that we're not doing. But the money of it, I think it's just crazy.
Yeah, the money of it. I mean, I don't think any of us saw it coming. As an artist specifically, as someone who is a spiritual conductor, as someone who helps people get free, does this current political moment, and I'm saying that knowing that this will be evergreen for at least 4 years. We're going to be talking about this current political moment for at least the next 4 years. Mm. Does that shift, like, how maybe you'll approach going into So Lovely?
I think it doesn't shift it. I think we have already been on this trajectory of resilience and fight the power from the inception of So Lovely. And I think it's like just even more needed now than ever before. And I'm really grateful for my co-producers and our family, the space that we've been able to create. The Bay is so diverse. So, you know, hiring DJs of different cultures and seeing those different cultures get on the dance floor. It's like music I didn't grow up on. But when I see them getting together, and it's like, you know, these are literal songs of resistance from other, you know, cultures. And I'm just moved by it. I think that we are not the type of folks to, I mean, we're still, it's weird. We're still in our little bubble, you know, in Oakland, like we feel safe here. You know,
we've been
having,
we
right?
did.
Well, we did.
I don't know about now.
Right. It is concerning, you know, it is like, and I'm close with the owners of the White Horse. You know, which the White Horse is historical gay bar, and it's now owned by a Black and Asian woman, Patty Dingle. And, you know, they immediately put out a statement, you know, about White Horse being a safe space and how, you know, what they're planning on doing to keep it that way. And it's scary, but, you know, we are not ones to back down, and we may have to be strategic. That's a scary thought, actually. I might have to sit with that a little more.
We're good at being strategic. And I think one of the things that the Bay does really well is there's this beautiful, I think it's one of the things actually, and Oakland in specific, that I'm gonna talk about. I think it's one of the things that drew me here, you know, when I showed up with my infant baby and I was trying to figure out where I was gonna raise her. One of the things that drew me to the town was this beautiful merging of art and politic into a resistance movement. Like, we got soundtracks to our movements here. You know, soundtracks, aerosol tracks.
It's true.
Painting tracks. Do you know what I mean? You know, like, all of it comes together in a way that I think is really uniquely Oakland and really politically powerful.
I agree.
Well, I mentioned So Lovely. Tell the folks what it is.
Yeah, So Lovely, it's more than just an event. It's So Lovely is an institution, Chad. Okay? Like, it is a multi-generational, multicultural home base for a lot of folks. And so it's myself, Aima the Dreamer, and DJ Emancipation. This was Emancipation's idea, and she brought us in. And that was 13 years ago. We've been doing this event for 13 years, and I'm super proud of that. And, you know, when we started, we were like in our early 30s, and there was older folks than us coming. We were very, very intentional about the music that we play. You know, we are very intentional about the vibe that we create at So Lovely. So it's like, we'll build altars to our ancestors. We are playing music that is empowering to women. You know, this is like very, very serious to us. So we would have, you know, older folks come, and those older folks still come. So we've got new younger folks coming now, and I'm so glad they've caught on, because that's cute. You know, we got like 25-year-olds all the way up to 65, 70-year-olds coming. And so it's like, you know, a lot of Black and brown people. And we're just amazed at what we have created, because we didn't know that it would, you know, I didn't know it would be what it has become. And I always tell this little tidbit, because there's been times where we've been trying to decide, are we going to keep this going? And there are young folks that come to us and say that I'm queer and my parents don't know it, and I can come here and be myself. So thank you all so much for what you do. And that is a major motivation to keep creating the space.
18 years full-time DJ, not done yet. You've achieved so many milestones. What's on the DJ bucket list? Where are you going next?
Ooh, I want to get out of here some more. I want to do some festivals. I want to play in other countries. I wouldn't mind going on tour, even though people tell me that that's not as great as it sounds. I am thinking more about what type of music I want to play. I never did kind of get into a niche, but if I were going to, it would be soul music. So I'm thinking, like, do I want to just do one genre? I'm trying to do more weddings and corporate stuff, honestly, because I can go to bed early and then be more choosy about, you know, what else I got going on. But I've been enjoying curating and putting on younger DJs, up and coming folks. That's been great. You know, I just think there's so much talent out there. So I'm grateful to be, a mentor in any kind of way to anyone. I do want to start teaching DJ classes. It's kind of like, I have to, I don't have really a choice. That's something I got to do. But yeah, I am open to all of the possibilities. I want to mention real quick, I'm on public radio on KLW on Wednesday nights. And that has almost saved me as a DJ, because I can play whatever kind of music I want on that thing. So it's really like, my heart feels so much better. My mind and my soul feel so much better just being able to dig around into, you know, jazz and rock and soul and blues. Like, you know, I don't got to make people dance.
Yes.
So
industry with the music. Yes.
I don't know if I was going to make it.
Yes. And I'm so glad to hear you say that jazz and rock and blue. Like, I'd be rolled into West Oakland blaring my country. And people look at it. And I'm like, listen, all of it, all of the above. But like,
it's beautiful music.
You know, it is beautiful music. And all of it's ours anyway. So I don't know what y'all looking at me sideways for.
That's right.
But this whole conversation about you, like, black people, like, we're only supposed to listen to this kind of music. And I find that mostly from other black people. But like, what are you listening to? I'm like, something you should be listening to as well.
Open your mind, child.
Open your mind and your soul and get this Randy Travis in your life.
I know, that's right.
All right, DJ Lady Ryan, that is it for us today. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Kat Brooks.
You've been listening to Law and Disorder, a podcast where we expose the cracks in our system, agitate for resistance, and collectively build a new world in which all of us can thrive. That's it for this episode, family. Law and Disorder is produced at KPFA, that's listener-supported radio on the Pacifica Network. The show is produced by Jesse Strauss and hosted by me, Kat Brooks. Our theme music was composed by Steve Raskin of Fort Knox 5. Our Resistance in Residence theme music was composed by Jesse Strauss. If you like what you heard, please follow us on social media at Law and Dis. And subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. You can also find our content live at 8 a.m. weekdays on KPFA. That's 94.1 FM in the Bay Area. Our show and all KPFA's programs are funded exclusively by you, the listeners. If you're in a position to support us, please donate today at kpfa.org. Take care of yourself and take care of each other. We all we got, fam.